you had another French.
Yeah. Well, we have another person in the studio who is not French.
But who happens to speak French.
Apparently, yeah. So Kendra is no. here to help us with the show production, and that is awesome because... go ahead,
yes,
say hello.
I am learning all of the buttons, so if there is a problem, it was me.
Yeah, so we asked Kendra to join us to take care of the technical side of the show because in previous weeks I was interviewing and, you know, doing the buttons at the same time and I made a lot of mistakes. We had lots of problems, lots of technical problems. So now we have Kendra who's here so that next time something goes wrong, it's her fault and not mine. So there you go.
And everyone can focus on its own thing.
And Kendra is lots of fun, so we are really happy to have her in the studio with us. And sometimes she's gonna, you know, intervene in the show and interrupt and
ask relevant questions.
Cool, excellent. So today we have JB on the show again.
Thank you
were
you for
here.
Having me.
Well, you're welcome. It's always a pleasure. And last time you were here, we had Unity on the show because
yes,
you
it was
were.
Lucas.
Yes, so you work on the Visual Studio extension for Unity?
At Microsoft, I'm the dev lead for the Visual Studio Tools for Unity extension, which is effectively bridging Visual Studio and Unity. This way you get to create your 3D game or your 2D game in Unity. Unity takes care of everything graphical, and when it's time for you to program your game to add scripts or behavior, to your object in games, where you get to use the best C# IDE there is. Visual
cool,
Studio.
Very cool. But today we are not going to talk much about that. We are going to talk about another thing, the other thing that you are super famous for, which is Cécile, and
is Cécile.
The work you've done around manipulating IR.
Yes. In a previous life, a while ago, I started working on this library, Cécile, which is part of the Mono project, which allows you to read, modify, and write .NET binaries. And today, that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about how you get control of those binaries that you create with .NET, how you can analyze them, and what's the best tool for the job. I'll be talking about three different libraries that you could use and what they're good for.
Okay, so typical cases where you would want to use Cécile, you mentioned analyzing the code, so that's one. What else can you do? You said that you can actually manipulate the IR.
Yes,
there's
plenty of use cases. You could, sometimes you only want to read an assembly just to figure out what's inside in terms of types, methods, or even the IL code. And sometimes you want to modify them and change the behavior. But yeah, we'll go into more details. And I even have demos for you to show later.
Demos, love it. Okay.
Let's get started.
Sure.
I think you wanted to start with maybe why I did get into this, and what's the origin of this work that worked for you?
Yes, and actually, before we switch to the demo, I think you have an interesting personal journey.
Thank you.
And professional journey. So, you tell us about what you did in the past, what you did in France, how you got into the Mono project, how you got into Microsoft.
Which is quite a change. Yeah. Yes, that's a good idea. Let's start with that. So, a long time ago, back in France, and I think it was maybe winter vacations, I bought a book which was about a new language called C# and a new platform called .NET. It was in French and it was bundled with a CD because...
At the time, yeah.
Because at the time we had CDs. And on this CD you could find the SDK for the first beta of .NET. And at that time I was writing a website in PHP and I was looking for other platforms that I could learn, and I immediately fell in love with the platform how easy it was to get started even in command line, and how better the experience was with an IDE like Visual Studio.net at the time. It's the first beta that was along with .NET, with the first beta of .NET. So I started working on C# and .NET. And I've been a long time follower of open source. I've followed the Mono project since pretty much its inception. And I remember you and I were part of this .NET guru community back in France.
Yeah.
And there was this gentleman named Thomas Gillon, was working on a project named AspectDNG. And the goal of this project was to introduce aspect-oriented programming to .NET.
Yeah, so aspect-oriented programming being a way to inject behavior into your code in a kind
basically
of a lateral manner.
Everything that is technical and that is
That shouldn't be the responsibility of your business logic, for example.
Exactly.
If you want to inject logging or whatever.
Yeah, or transaction. Mm. At that time, there was this idea that you could use aspect-oriented programming to do that. And in effect, aspect-oriented programming at that time basically meant modifying your program by adding pieces of code to keep, like after compilation, to keep your source code clean of technical concerns. At that time, there was AspectJ on Java, which was really famous, and we had nothing on .NET. So we started investigating. And at that point, something was clear. We were missing a good library to read and write .NET binaries from C#. There were libraries. You could use the native CLR API to do that, but they were cumbersome to use. We wanted something easy. So I started writing a library to do that. Later on, this person on internet, which is quite famous, Miguel de Icaza, blogged
I've
about
heard of him.
You've heard of him?
Blog him on the
about the
twice.
Fact
I
that
think people know him.
Yeah, I think so.
He's apparently famous.
He is. He blogged about the fact that the Mono project needed a library like this because he already had in mind something that became the Mono linker that we could talk about that is used in Xamarin. And I sent him an email. I said, "Hey, I'm writing a library like this. Are you interested in it? Could it be part of the Mono project?" And that's how this little library named Cecil became Mono Cecil and part of the Mono project. That was 2004, 2005. I had the opportunity to do two Google Summer of Code to work on first Cecil and then the Mono linker. So during summer vacations in college, I would do that. Instead of flipping burgers, I would flip bits.
Nice.
And yeah, Cecil grew. It's been used in a lot of different tools as part of the Mono project. I dropped off college to join a startup named DB4O. We're working on this object-oriented database for Java and .NET. And in 2007, I got an offer to join the Mono team full-time, which I took.
So your second job was to work full-time on Mono? And
pretty much, yes.
A paid employee of...
At that time, the company was named Novell.
Yeah, it was Novell, right. But you were still in France, working
remotely. But I was working from France. Yeah. Pretty much the entire Mono team was distributed. Mm. It came from Miguel's free software and open source route, where basically it took the people that were right for the job anywhere they were. Mm. And that's how I got into this team. And I worked for 4.5 years at Novell on Mono. Mm-hmm. Then Novell got acquired. They decided that they would stop working on Mono. Miguel went on to create Xamarin. And I went on to create a small startup named Syntax Tree. And back in the Mono team, I've been following this little company named Unity Technologies that started to use Mono very early. They had this bizarre idea that a few guys in a garage could build a game editor for macOS.
Yeah.
And then now
that
arrived.
That little thing is used on something like, I don't know, 60% of mobile games or...
Yeah, pretty much. Like it's used by 1.6 million developers
a month.
I think there are almost 1,000 people at this company now. They're all over the place. Like, I think that on both on iOS and Android, 50% at least of the top 100 games are made with Unity.
Most of the indie game industry is using is building on Unity.
Mm. It's huge. They grew tremendously during this period. And at Syntax 3, we decided to bridge Unity with Visual Studio. Because with Unity, you get to use C# and .NET to create your game. And we decided that, and we thought that Visual Studio was the best tool for the job. So we created a small plugin.
So you actually started the plugin before you joined Microsoft?
Yes. Yeah. It was at this company named Syntax 3. We started doing that. We started selling the product in 2012. We announced the first version at Unite, the Unity conference. And in a few months later, I got Sébastien Le Breton as a partner in the company to help me build the product. And in 2014, in July, Syntax 3 has been acquired by Microsoft. The product was named Unity VS. It was paid for. It's now named the Visual Studio Tools for Unity, and it's free. And let's just say that we have a ton more users now that it's free and backed by Microsoft.
Very nice.
And so in 2014, we joined Microsoft. I spent a year in France, and I relocated to Redmond last November. I joined the Visual Studio platform team. And recently, after the acquisition of another company named Xamarin, again by Miguel and DeCasa and Nat Friedman, my little team doing the tools for Unity has been moved under the Xamarin side of the developer division.
And you work with Miguel again.
And
he's your boss, right?
And Miguel is now my boss again. So it's kind of closing the loop, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah, cool, very cool.
And yeah, just to go back to the actual subject, back when it was Novell, back when I was working at Novell for Miguel, we started this project, the Monolinker. It basically, the point was you take a set of assemblies, a program, you give it entry points or routes, like main, like the main method of your program. It's pretty much a garbage collector for code. It takes a set of routes, and it will remove everything that is not needed for this program to run. The goal was to reduce.
So when you say it's a garbage collector for code, how far does the analogy go? Do you do something like mark and sweep for code, or?
Yes, that's pretty much what we do. We have the tool is architected around a pipeline of steps.
Yeah.
One of the steps is taking a set of assemblies and marking using the known routes, like a garbage collector, like the entry point or a set of types that you know you do not want to remove.
Yeah.
And we will work all over the dependencies of those types.
And it tears out all the code paths that are possible.
Yes, we'll mark them. And in another step, we'll remove everything that is not marked. At Xamarin, the folks that ended up maintaining the linker added more steps that do more complex analysis, and they even have the ability to do dead code removal or assume the value of like a field, like a static field. So you say, oh, we know that is OS down is true. So it will have the ability to remove all the else branches when you're testing for it.
It even optimizes your code.
Yes, it does.
Not just removing the part of the framework you don't need.
And every Xamarin application on the iOS store or the Android store has been, or even Unity has been run through this linker to make them as small as possible.
Yeah, because of course, when you deploy to a mobile device, every byte counts. And
it does, and you really want, like if you're targeting markets where bandwidth is limited, like China, you really want your application or your game to be as small as possible. And at the root of the linker, well, there is this tiny library named Sessio, which reads assemblies, has the ability to modify and write them back.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like how there is a continuity in everything you've done, and it all works together.
It all fits together.
I think it's always inspiring to see that sort of thing where everything you do is just not just something you do and then you switch to something else. There is actually a logic to it all. So very interesting.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a fun journey.
Yeah, it's not over.
And I've been in Redmond since last November. It will almost be a full year, and my wife, and we're having a very good time. And fall here is beautiful.
Oh yeah, I love fall here. Spring is not bad either. And there are lots of opportunities in this company to do all kinds of fun things. So you'll find some interesting stuff.
I mean, ever since we were acquired by Microsoft, the transformation already started when we were acquired, but it's pretty amazing how especially the dev division turned around, embracing open source.
Oh yeah,
and really embracing it. It's pretty cool.
All right, cool. Let's look at some code.
Yes, let's look at some code. So one of the reasons that I really like .NET is that when I started using it, there was this reflection capabilities built into the runtime. Mm-hmm. You could retrieve the metadata for a type, for its methods, and through reflection or introspection, the framework had a lot of capabilities like data binding. Everything is made easy because you have the ability to look at how the program are made. And I really think that as a programmer, if you want to get really good at working with a platform, you need to have control over everything from the source code to the binaries that you create and deploy. With Roslyn, you get complete control over your source code. After it's been compiled with Cecil or other libraries, you get complete control over your binaries. You can analyze them. You can manipulate them. If you want to build tools that analyze all the dependencies of your code, like ndepend from Patrick in France, that I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
Ndepend is built on Cecil. It takes .NET assemblies, and it will create a graph of dependencies between your types, your assemblies.
Actually, I'm thinking I should probably have Patrick on the show sometime.
That would be a great idea. I think he would love it.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's all right. I selected three libraries that you could find on Nugget.
Okay.
And all of these libraries have a common purpose. It's allow you to read, write, and analyze .NET binaries.
Okay.
All good? Are we all good?
It's okay. You can't hear that machine. There's a really loud machine buzzing in here.
The
mics don't pick it up.
I should have warned you about that. So the machine makes a lot of noise, but that's not being picked up by the microphones.
No, I think they're pretty sensitive.
You were totally glaring at it.
Yeah. All right. So let's switch to my computer. I have this on.NET solution open in Visual Studio 2015. I have three projects, and all of them, you want to come and see?
It's okay.
All right. And all of them are using one library. So let's look at the first one. The first one is...
You should probably bump up your font size.
The font size.
Yeah.
Bang.
There you go.
All right. The first one is a library named Managed Reflection, or Managed Reflection. It's an implementation of System Reflection and System Reflection.emit, the two namespaces, that is completely managed. One thing to know when you use System Reflection to reflect over your code is that it's completely tied to the runtime. It's implemented by .NET or by Mono. And you cannot create an assembly for another runtime. It will need to read an assembly for the current runtime. So what Managed Reflection does is that it has the same, pretty much the same surface API as System Reflection and System Reflection Emit, but it's completely implemented just as a plain C# library that allows you to target different versions of the .NET runtime. So let me give you a good example. Originally, the Mono C# compiler was implemented using System Reflection Emit. It's which also meant that it worked very well for .NET. But when we had .NET and .NET 2, or .NET 2 and .NET 4, we had to use one version of the compiler per version of the .NET framework you target. And there's this project named IKVM, which had the exact same problem. So the guy that writes IKVM, Jeroen Freitas from the Netherlands, which is also someone I think you should have on .NET and invite him.
Okay.
He writes this IKVM project, which is a Java virtual machine running on .NET.
Yeah, I remember actually using that a long, long time ago.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I've used it too. There was this library to actually parse and modify JavaScript files that I needed to use, and it was distributed as a jar. And I really didn't want to rewrite everything in C#.
Right.
So I used IKVM, I converted this jar to a DLL.
Yeah, I've seen it used a lot as some kind of shortcut where you need something from the Java world, but there is a cost.
Use it from .NET. There is a cost, of course. It's really good. Like last time I checked, it could even run Eclipse.
So that's still being maintained actively.
Yeah, it is. I'm sure there are a lot of
I hadn't
companies.
Heard about it for a while. So
It's a pretty niche use case.
Yeah, right? It is. But it's very, very interesting. Yeah, that's a great idea.
And so IKVM could generate DLLs from Java jars, and it could do it either at runtime or as a compilation step. And they were using System Reflection Emit, which meant that they were limited to a version of the runtime.
Oh, so actually the runtime cost is probably not that big.
It's not that big if you do it ahead of time.
Right.
You still
what
have
about
to
the libraries?
To
yeah, you still have to bring in the
yeah, you have to
the
bring
Java
the
libraries
Java libraries. But Java length string would be mapped to system string, just as Java length object will be mapped to system object.
Yeah.
And it works. It's pretty impressive.
Interesting.
Anyway, so Jeroen started this library, which implemented the same API surface as System Reflection and System Reflection Emit. Back in the days, it was named IKVM.reflection, but it's not necessarily limited to IKVM, which is why you renamed it to Manage Reflection. So let's have a look at how it works. The first thing you have to do, when you start with System Reflection and System Reflection Emit, you start with the current app domain. Here, you start with the universe. So you just have to instantiate a new universe, which is pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Playing God.
Oh, yeah. playing God with your binaries. here, I'm simply loading a file, just like you would do app domain load file. With a location, which is a current assembly, and I'm iterating over all the types. So let's switch to this one is a startup project. So if I run it,
we would have
program and foo, which are the two types that are in this program, right? I have foo here. It doesn't do much. Mm. The nice thing is that it's, except for the universe, it's exactly the same API surface as system reflection, which meant that when the Mono C# compiler decided to port their C# compiler to IKVM reflection or managed reflection, all they had to do is to create a define and to include the namespace either system reflection or managed reflection in all of the files, depending if they wanted to compile a dynamic compiler for the current runtime or ahead of time compiler for any runtime.
Right.
And that's what the current C# compiler of Mono, MCS, is doing, or what IKVM Reflection is doing. Yeah, it's super sweet. So basically the point is, why would you use this library? Well, exactly in those use cases. If you have a large system reflection and system reflection based code base, and that you want to decouple it from the current runtime, all you have to do is to use managed reflection. It's available on Nugget. It supports the .NET standard 1.3, so it could run on .NET Core just as well as .NET 4.6, and it's pretty sweet.
That's very useful.
It's very useful. It could, like everything you do with system reflection and more, because like they added like extension methods on top of the standard system reflection and system reflection emit methods. To have more control over what you generate. But a really good use case is if you want to read an assembly, just like you would with system reflection, or if you want to write one from scratch with system reflection emit, you could use this library to decouple yourself from the runtime, also to get better performances. Because system reflection and system reflection emit, especially emit, can tend to be a little slow because there's a lot of back and forth between the runtime and the managed API surface. Whereas with managed reflection, everything is fully managed. So you can generate a lot of assemblies in little time in case you want to do that.
Nice.
Like one use case could be, I don't know, like when you generate XML serialization wrappers or binary.
Yeah, there are lots and lots of applications for reflection.
Yeah, like, or if you want to, I don't know, generate assemblies like for protocol buffer or any serialization format and want to do that on the fly, you could use this.
Mm. Are there many other abstractions on top of CCL?
So that's not on top of CCL, well, it's fully managed. Well, and that's completely implemented.
So that's not using. Oh, it's not using CCL.
Not at all.
No, it's just a similar kind of.
It's a similar library in the sense that it allows you to read and write assemblies. It doesn't allow you to take one assembly, modify something, and write it back. It doesn't do that. You you load it, you see what's in it, and you can write new ones. But you cannot take one, change it, and write it back.
Okay.
No, that's all right. But like, it's similar to CCL in the sense that it. Like the data you can read and write is the same, which is .NET assembly.
And it's a well-known API.
Hmm?
It's a well-known API as well.
And it's a well-known API. It's very easy. Like every .NET programmer, even like line of business application, use system reflection or at one point. So it's very easy to get started with this one. And I'm actually pretty jealous that we didn't have something on top of CCL, which also emulates the system reflection API, because it would have allowed from the get-go a lot of usages from people already using system reflection to port it over CCL. Mm-hmm. But there's this library by this great hacker, so we might as well use it.
Sure.
All right, the second one I want to show is named System Reflection Metadata. This one has been made by Microsoft, and it's the library that powers Roslyn. So it's already battle proven. All right, let me unzoom a little bit. System reflection metadata, like has actually nothing to do with system reflection, the namespace. It's a completely new set of APIs that will allow you to read and write .NET binaries. So before we get started, I think it makes sense to think about what a .NET binary is. A .NET binary is actually a Windows binary, a PE file, which has different sections. And as part of this section, there's a metadata section with tables and code. You could pretty much see the tables section of a binary as a relational database. You have a type table, you have a method table, a type points to n methods, a type has n fields, an assembly has n types, a type name points to a string table. So yes, it's pretty much a relational database included inside a file. And what system reflection metadata does is that it gives you a low-level view of those tables. So it's very optimized. For Roslyn has lots of constraints. So whenever you want to compile a program in Roslyn, you need to read all the references that you use in your program. And you also need to write back binaries. And for both those tasks, system reflection metadata is used. So system reflection metadata is very good to give you a very optimized view of your programs. It's a little bit cumbersome to use. You have to really know what you're looking after. You have to know a little bit of the assembly format before you can use it, but it allocates as little as possible, and it's as fast as possible for Roslyn to have the best throughput.
Okay, so what we're doing here. So your code here is reading the current assembly.
So my code here is reading the current assembly. I'm creating a PE reader from system reflection metadata. I'm getting a metadata reader from it. And then
you perform a link query on top of all that?
Yeah, it's just an object model.
Right, so yeah, of course you can do link.
So this is just link to objects.
Okay.
I don't think, like, system reflection metadata doesn't have its own link provider. This is just link to objects. So what I'm doing is that I'm looking at all the handles for all the types in the metadata, and I want to look at their custom attribute. I want to make sure that the custom attribute is defined on methods, and that the custom attribute, the type name, is marked attribute. We have one just here, right? So again, it's pretty much browsing the table format. Like, you get all the types, so you go over all the rows in your type tables. When you need to look for a string, you do not have access to the name, to the string directly. You get the handle to it that points to the string table inside the binary. So that's what we're doing. We're trying to find all the types that are marked with this marked attribute. So if we run it, hopefully it should find it. We found that the type foo as a marked attribute.
So of course, for that particular task, I could have done the same thing with reflection.
You could have done it with reflection. In that case, it's actually much faster. And in case your application or your app domain is long-lived, and that's another thing with that I did not mention with managed reflection, is that one of the drawback when using system reflection is that there's, with .NET desktop, there is no way to unload an assembly once you load it in the app domain. The only way to do that is to start up a new app domain and perform some analysis in the app domain and take it down, and all of this has a cost. Whereas with all those libraries, It's just .NET objects. It will be garbage collected when you're done with them.
Right, so instead of having to load the assembly in an app domain and pretty much preparing to run that code.
Yes, and
here in that case, you're only interested in looking at the code. So you load it like you connect to a database.
That's correct. Mm. And you don't even need to have all the references. Like you could just need to look at that particular DLL or executable file. And you do not need all the references.
You don't
to be
need
resolved
to pull all the graph in
like you would with system reflection.
Yeah, of course. Oh, that makes total sense.
So it's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So the use case for system reflection metadata is to use whenever you need the best performance that you could get. One example would be, MEF, the composition framework.
Yep.
It does composition using custom attributes. Say, I'm exporting this type, and this field imports an instance of this interface. That's traditionally done with system reflection. One use case for system reflection metadata would be an optimized
discovery process for
discovery process for all your attributes in an assembly.
Mm.
To create your MEF graph faster than you would through reflection.
Interesting.
So that's the best use case. Again, it's a little bit harder to use than the other one I'm showing, but it's very fast. It's very easy on your memory, and it what powers Roslyn. So,
yeah.
And those guys have quite a bit of tests behind them. So
I think it's pretty safe to say
it's pretty solid. Yeah. Yes.
Cool. Very cool.
And the last one is the one I did wrote, and it's monosyscial. So let's have a look at what we can do with it. So this is using the latest nugget, which is the monosyscial 0.10 beta. All right. And let's have a look
at Cecil is available for what flavors of .NET today? All of them?
All of them.
Yeah.
Like the latest nugget supports .NET Standard 1.3 as well.
Mm.
But traditionally, it's been used on .NET Desktop or Mono.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's have a look at this little piece of C# code, which I'm compiling in a target library. Again, we have a marker attribute that we're using on some methods. And we have a bunch of types. I don't know if you ever had this use case, but sometimes in a company, like you would get a third-party library that is not always maintained from a provider. And sometimes you would like to use some of the private types that are defined in this library. And that's the last one you would get. So yeah, like why bother? I have this. Let's just write a piece of Cecil code.
Make all types public.
Yeah, makes all types public. So this is this is Cecil. I read a module, which is an assembly. Conceptually, an assembly might have different files, but 99.99% of all .NET assemblies have only one module. So let's work with that. I'm reading the module, which is the compilation of this piece of C# code. I'm iterating over all the types, setting them public, and I write the assembly back. All right, so I have the library opened in ILSpy.
For each type in types, is public equals true. Couldn't be simpler.
Yeah, so let's run it. All right, let's refresh. And now all my types are public.
Very nice.
And there's a lot of things you could do. You could add your own custom attributes. And you can even change the code, which is one of the strong suit of Cecil. Like system reflection or managed reflection or even system reflection metadata, they won't give you a high-level view of your code. So in case you've never seen it, we could actually look into it. This is what IL looks like. IL is a stack-based language. It's very simple, and when you compile C# program or any .NET program, it's compiling to this IL.
It's very simple. That's easy for you to say, who has been doing IL for years. It's kind of intimidating, I think, for most .NET users.
It is. All right. It may be intimidating.
Not because it's complicated, but because it's less expressive than the high-level languages, by definition.
It is a little less expressive than higher-level languages. But once you get into it, you realize that it's still, if not as high-level as C#, it's still not completely low-level.
Right, like it's not assembly.
It's easier than assembly. It's stack-based.
Yeah.
So you want to call a method, so you push the argument, mm-hmm. you push the type on which, or the instance on which you want to call the method, you call the method, mm-hmm. and that's pretty much all
there is. Yeah, it becomes a lot easier to read once you've understood the stack-based nature
exactly.
of the thing.
So here I have just like one call operand on this method. It's a static method, so it doesn't need anything else, and it returns. And that's all there is to it.
Could you zoom in on that? It's kind of small.
I don't know. I can't. All right.
Oh, right.
That's okay. Yeah. Let's find something else with more code. And I don't know. Copy it inside. All right. Load argument 0, which is this. Load arg 1, we store a field, which is this value. We reload this, we load the other field, and we return this value. And that's all there is to it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's it. Anyways.
Easy.
So why don't we all write IL?
I don't know.
All right, let's see what we could do. So we have, let's recompile this and clean my little binary. Let's refresh. All my types are private again. I have this program. This program, let's switch back to C#. All those methods have an attribute. Yeah. And what I want to do is to write a program that removes this attribute and just add some code to say that, some logging code that say, we're entering this method. So let's do exactly that. We're reading this module. We're creating a reference to console write line.
Okay.
As to the method. We iterate over all the types. Again, it's just linked to objects. Over all the types in my module, we iterate over all their methods. We check that they have a body, like abstract method don't have a body, so we can do anything here. We iterate over their custom attributes. If the type is marker attribute, then we want to work on this method. One of the nice things with CCL is that the object model is very discoverable. Like a module has type, a type has method, the method have a body or not, like a method has custom attributes. It's very easy using IntelliSense to dive into what your program is using the CCL object model.
Mm.
So for all those methods, I'm simply inserting new instructions. The first one will load a string, which is entering the name of the method, and we will call console write line. Let's run this. And if we refresh, my marker are gone, and all my methods are logging what they're doing.
That is awesome. Yeah. I love that.
And it's very easy.
Yeah, it is.
All you need to do is learn a bit of IL, go through the inexistent MonoCCL documentation, which is like find some Stack Overflow post and simply try the API or get in touch with the MonoCCL Google group. And it's pretty easy to get into.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I'm sold.
Nice. And there's so many use cases. I think we have a list of users. It may not be up to date. Some people may have used something else or not. Do we have users? And it is widely used. It's on GitHub. That's my name, /session. We have compilers using it, decompilers as well. I'm using IRSpy, which is using Monosession to read the assemblies. And on top of the IL, they're decompiling the IL into as best as C# they could. We have the Just Code decompiler, which is also based on C# from Telerik, which is open source. It's used in MonoDevelop, in ShrubDevelop, in a lot of IDEs. It's used in tools that are like Gendarm, which is kind of FXCop, but open source. It's used in testing tools. There's a lot of uses when you start thinking about what you could do with your binaries. One I like is we have those C# folks, and they're using the F# interactive shell to write functions. And they want to send those functions and distribute them to a cluster. So they're simply writing the function, and they're using a library which will serialize the
find
F#
them,
code
extract them, and
in a DLL, distribute them, and run the query on many computers.
Interesting.
So there's lots of things that you could do.
One question I had is around, are there any security concerns associated with modifying assemblies like that?
If you modify an assembly, you're breaking its strong name.
Of course, so if it's signed, it's no longer signed. And
Yes. If you have the private key, you can sign it back afterwards. But if not, no.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, signing is not so the thing of the day.
No. So we have people. Actually, I was talking about him. My colleague, Sébastien Le Breton, wrote a reflector and plugin. I don't have it here, or even an ILSpy plugin, which allows you to modify your assemblies directly from your decompiler. So your right-click, replace method, and bang, save.
Okay.
And it's used by a lot of people that are targeting Unity games to change the behavior of the game.
Why?
People like to cheat, man.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh. That. Yeah, so security, yeah, we were talking about that.
Yeah. So if you're writing a game, that could be do concerned. All the checks server-side.
Yes, of course. It's like, yeah, it's like on a web application. You don't validate your arguments
you don't
on
trust
the client side. Well,
no.
you do, but you don't trust it. Okay, I want to remind everyone that we do take questions on this show. You can go to gitter.im/.net/home and ask questions to our guests. And today we have MWHerman2000, nice name, who's first saying that Cécile is awesome. So
thank you.
I agree with that.
Thank you, MWHerman2000.
Totally.
It's easy to understand and easy to use. And he's asking, do you know of a similar or identical API or object model for reading Java bytecode files?
I know of a bunch. The one I've used for Java was named ASM. The URL is asm.ow2.org. ASM is an all-purpose Java bytecode manipulation and analysis framework. And it's pretty nice to use.
Cool.
And there's a bunch of others, but this one is the one I've personally used.
Oh, okay. Cool. Good recommendation there. So we can switch. Did you have anything else to...
No, that's all I have.
Wow, very cool.
Like the use case for Cécile is like if you don't already have a system reflection code base and you can start from scratch, you would have a much easier to learn object model. And anytime you need to actually modify a binary, TCL is pretty much from the three the best tool for the job.
Excellent. All right. So that was very interesting. I'm sure that lots of the people watching this have learned a lot about CCR and code manipulation in general. Before we conclude the show, I want to make a couple of announcements or advertise for the great work that some of my colleagues are doing. So this week, or was it last week? Maybe it was last week. If you go to the blog, can we switch to?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do have it.
So if you go to the .NET blog, so Imo wrote a very detailed post about .NET Standard and what is next for .NET Standard. So if you're interested in .NET Standard 2.0, what this is going to bring to the platform, and what are the great API surface that we will have in the next version of .NET Standard that will work with .NET Core and that will open quite a lot of doors for .NET Core. Check it out. It's a very, very detailed post. It's a long read, but there is a nice summary on top if you don't
there's
have to
pictures.
Read the whole thing.
And there's nice pictures.
There's
There's pictures, yeah.
This one explains everything.
Yeah.
And that's personally something I'm very excited about, like for having worked with both Xamarin and Unity.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it was, I think, harder to get interested in to target .NET Core.
Yes.
From those user base.
Yes.
Especially Unity, which uses the full power of the full .NET framework.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like this direction, I think, is super nice. And I'm really excited to play with .NET Standard 2 and how you could federate all those open source for Xamarin or commercial that are based on mono platforms.
Yeah, absolutely.
Federate everything around one .NET standard. That's super exciting.
Yeah, and it's it really is the vision that was behind .NET Standard from the start. But of course, everything takes time, and maybe it wasn't very easy for our users to see what we had as a vision about .NET Standard, just looking at .NET Standard 1.x.
Yep.
And so that article really gives the vision. It explains what .NET will look like in the future. And what it looks like is that you will have an API surface. There's a great analogy that Kieran Mockford came up with. It's that .NET Standard is to .NET what POSIX is to Unix.
All right.
And that's a great analogy. Check it out. Very, very nice blog post.
blogsmsdn.microsoft.com/.net.
Yep. And the other little shout out I want to give this week is for our own Kendra.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
But no, she has to switch to herself.
I switched to myself.
Yeah, how fun is that? You built a nice, very nice, very entertaining video to show people how to use VS Code.
YouTube. It's not on YouTube yet, but
it's not on the YouTube
video.
Yet. It's it's on the Channel 9.
Yeah, we're trying to figure it out.
So go to Channel 9. I think it's on the homepage right now, isn't it?
It might be in one of the scrolling boxes. It's a short tutorial on getting started with C# in Visual Studio Code and compiling with .NET Core. Documentation was on a couple different pages, and we had some people like, why can't I just do it? And it should only take like 3.5 minutes.
And it does.
And it does.
Yeah.
I don't even like skip through. It actually takes that long.
So yeah, it's a great video, and I hope you make many more like that. So
yeah, it's on Windows. I will be making ones for Mac and Linux, and maybe like a debug tutorial and like installing Git just for new people getting started.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. So next week, What about next week? Do I know who we have next week? I don't think so.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, well, maybe...
We'll find someone.
Yeah, yeah, maybe one of the people we talked about,
yeah,
actually.
So yeah, we talked about Patrick Smakia from NDPM.
Yeah.
And Jeroen Freiters from IKVM.
Yeah, so I'll send an email. And yeah, see if they want to come. All right, cool. Thanks, everyone.
Well,
thanks,
thank
JB.
You for having me.
Thanks, Kendra.
I had a blast.
No problem.
You'll be here again next week?
Probably.
Probably, maybe. Well, and thanks, everyone, for watching. And we'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Ha ha.